This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
I'm Allie and I live in Southern California. I'm a huge fan of OTI. Their joyful outlook on sobriety is what finally inspired me to quit drinking. I've been a member since day one and I'm rapidly approaching 365 days alcohol-free, which is unreal. I love that Ben and Shaz are not just the podcast hosts. They also openly engage with members during the multiple weekly Zoom meetings and interact on the community member forum. You will not find a more supportive group of people. There's nothing like this in the United States. I'm beyond grateful to be a part of the Sober Rebellion.
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk. To yet another episode of Over the Influence, the fabulous, massively growing, superb, brilliant, alcohol-free podcast, if I do say so myself. This is series two of Over the Influence, and it's all about the brilliant guests. Before I introduce our next guest today, just a quick recap, if you're joining us for the first time, about who the hell we are. My name's Sharon Hartley, Shazza, wrong side of 45, knocking on. Decided to do an alcohol-free challenge a couple of years ago for 90 days, and I am still sober. 2 years alcohol-free, and there's not a day goes by when this doesn't surprise me. Freddie is also alcohol-free, and he's doing pretty damn well.
Hello, I'm Freddie. I am the wrong side of 38, so pretty much the same as Shazza, really. I live in the northwest of the UK. I've got two kids, and I used to be very stressed, very depressed, very unhappy with life and very hungover. But then I stopped drinking, broke a few world records, won a few ultra marathons, started the world's fastest growing, probably alcohol-free podcast. And now I am honoured to be here with our new guest today and almost 600 days alcohol-free.
Absolutely fantastic. And we've got to say, background Ben, who... he's sliding closer to the foreground as every episode continues with this series. Background Ben didn't start alcohol free, but now you're just about to hit your own milestone, aren't you, Ben?
I am. Hello, I'm Ben. I'm the producer of this podcast. I'm the wrong side of 32. And I am, yeah, tomorrow, actually, guys, is my, wow, my 90 days.
Yay! Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Where did that time go?
I know it's flown by, isn't it? But I've rather than 90 days, I'm looking at, I've done calendar months. So it's 3 months in a couple of days, basically. But I'm chuffed. I can't believe that it's been as easy as it has been, actually. First month, kind of dodgy. The last 2 months have been a dream.
Absolutely brilliant.
You probably found it a lot easier, Ben, because you had a podcast to help you.
Well, I think I've said this before. It's great because obviously we've got a bit of a WhatsApp chat between us guys. And if I'm ever kind of like in a situation where I think, oh, I really fancy a drink, I just go, hey guys, going to a barbecue today. And then they're both like, you're great, you're sober, you're alcohol free.
Yeah.
I'm like, yes, I am going to do it. So it is very useful having you guys.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Thank you so much. So as I said a little bit earlier, this podcast, this series, it's all about you, your stories, and bringing you the best guests we can find. I can't wait to introduce our next guest to you. She's called Dawn Comerley. She's otherwise known as the Sober Fish. She's all over social media. And I think we can start off by saying we've all got something in common here. Myself, Dawn, Freddie, and Ben. None of us set out to do this. None of us set out to be chatting on this podcast today. And I don't think any of us set out to be completely sober. Dawn, welcome to Over the Influence. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm good, thank you. Thank you for a lovely introduction. And that's great, isn't it, that we're all very similar stories.
Dawn, when I found your account on social media, the Sober Fish, there's many things I love about it, but a couple are that, one, you don't take any prisoners.
Two, I do not.
You're very ballsy. And three, it's quite sweary. And I thought, yes, that's my sort of word.
I know. And it goes through phases that it can be, yeah, very sweary. And I get in a lot of trouble from people, you know, who say, I really like your account, but you swear too much. Has anyone answered to that? Isn't there really?
So, you are known, aka the Sober Fish. Let's talk about your drinking. Let's talk about life before sobriety. And I want to know where that name came from, the Sober Fish. Was it because you drank like one?
No, and it's quite funny, actually, because that's what everybody thinks. But I was actually nicknamed Fish because of my big mouth, and I was the fish wife. And because I was so loud, and a friend at school actually named me that, and it then got shortened to Fish, so everybody just called me Fish. My original blog, because it wasn't intended forever, was called Sober for 2017. But when I realised that I wasn't going to drink again, the name needed to get changed. And I can't remember why it became the Sober Fish. It just did. I was just the Sober Fish. And so, yeah, it became the Sober Fish story mid-2017.
What was your... Yeah, what was life like before you went on this journey, in terms of, were you a few glasses of wine every night? Was it about the weekend drinking? How was the old version of you?
I was the classic binge drinker. So I could go a week without a drink, but then I drank a week's quota in one night. Just the minute I started, there was no stopping me. And the result of that was, so if that generally happened on a Friday after work, Saturday would be a write-off. I generally didn't then drink Saturday night because I was always sick. So I'd just literally be sick all day. And obviously that got worse towards the end. It wasn't always like that. But towards the end, where it was so repetitive of this going out, getting drunk, can't remember anything, my main problem was texting. So I'd wake up in the morning and the phone would bleep and I just couldn't even look at it for hours because now I make a living out of words. I'm very good with words, particularly at 3 o'clock in the morning with people I don't like very much. And so I became scared of my phone. And I was just like, so I was scared of my phone. I was being sick. I couldn't get out of bed. I was cancelling arrangements. And I'm not an unreliable person, but I was becoming something I didn't really recognise. And I just kept saying, this is it. But just falling back into the trap again week after week. And so what actually happened was, by complete fluke, an article by Bored, I think it's called Bored Panda, showing before and after photos came into my newsfeed. And I hadn't thought about sobriety. So why it popped into my newsfeed, I don't know, because I hadn't Googled anything. I think I'm the only person that hasn't Googled, am I an alcoholic? Because I already knew the answer to that, really. And it popped into my newsfeed and I looked at these people and I was like, oh my God, they look incredible. Like, is that what happened? Because I never really thought that alcohol, I didn't think I looked that bad. I knew I had a weight problem, but I didn't think my skin looked that bad. And I like looked at this article and it just sparked something in my head. And I just thought, I need to give this a go, but I was unsure how to do it, really. And the article, the people had given up for a year. So I kind of knew that the length of time would have to be a year. And I'd done dry Januaries before, so I knew it had to be more than a month, because a month was no good for me. 1st of February was just party time and I just drank my quota again. So I knew it had to be for a long period of time. But I knew absolutely nothing about sobriety. I didn't know online communities existed. I didn't know how much your life would change. I just didn't know anything. So all of this is just, as I said earlier, it's just all kind of evolved without really knowing anything about it.
You describe yourself, Dawn, on your website as the ultimate former party animal. And that's something we can all relate to on this podcast. And did you just get bored of it? From my point of view, I was the biggest drunken dick in the village. You know, I would start the conga, you know, at Prinks, and then let's have some more drinks before we go out and have some drinks. And then let's have some drinks and let's do shots. So first to start the party, you know, first to fall asleep at the party, because obviously I've peaked at 8 o'clock and all that. And like you, I just thought, I can't be doing with this anymore. It's dull. It's boring. And I call it the sort of the hamster hangover wheel of hell. It just never stops. Did you reach that point, Dawn, where you just thought, I'm done?
Yeah. It was just really upsetting me how much time I was wasting feeling rubbish. And the payoff was the night that good for feeling this shit? Generally not, because I couldn't remember. So I made the decision in summer, and then I just kept having these repetitive weekends. I did have a moment, which I've never spoken about publicly, which cemented my decision that I had to do something, just a bit of a mental health moment that scared the life out of me because I didn't recognise myself. And then shortly after that, I got flu. So the decision was taken away because I literally was floored. And my decision then was, when I started to feel a bit better, was, do I have a drinking Christmas and start when I intended, or do I just quit now? And so my main aim for starting in November was so that I could get really drunk the following Christmas. That was my main aim. But I never got there, thank God.
It's never happened.
No.
Really?
No.
So I was going to ask, actually taking a couple of steps back to what you were saying about your journey and when you decided to stop, but it triggered an interesting theory. And at this point, Shazza and Ben do start rolling their eyes and putting their head in their hands.
Here we go.
When I come
here
up
we
with
go,
one of
Dawn.
These things.
Here we go.
It may surprise you, Dawn, but I'm not actually a scientist. But I still have these theories. I know. I'm as shocked as you are. And this is based on my own journey as well. And I know a lot of people are the same. When you set a date and you tell, you know, you've got to that stage where you think, oh, hang on, this is, you know, the bad times outweighing the good. It's time to make a change. And you set a date in the future, be that Boxing Day, New Year's Day, first of the next month, whenever it is. And I was certainly in this position. I'd have that date in the calendar. So I'd be like the people you saw in the supermarket before coronavirus with the toilet paper. I'd be like grabbing every drink that I could and pour. I'd be lapping it up like a thirsty dog. And I'd be only 2 days left till I stop drinking. Better drink some more. And then I'd get to that day and obviously massively hungover and then say, right, this is it. This is the day. And I'd always fail. I'd always, always fail. But the one time that it worked, and the last time I drank was when I woke up that morning. I hadn't planned to give up that day. I just said, enough is enough. And it sounds like there may be some similarities from you, say when you had that day, and I know you were saying you wanted to do that year and then get really smashed up the next Christmas. But I was just wondering in terms of your thoughts on that, you know, do you think that people have that moment when you just wake up and you say, you know, this is it, now I'm really going to make a change?
It's a really good question because...
Well, thank you. I'm quite proud of it as well.
From a non-scientist, well done.
Thank you.
I think it's down to the individual. I really do. I think, you know, my thoughts are you have to be ready, and whether you're ready the minute you wake up or whether you're ready by planning a date, it really comes down to the individual. I mean, I was ready, but my body told me I was ready before my head did, so I didn't really have a lot of choice. But I also, for me, it's the accountability that's the key. So by telling everyone I am not going to drink for 2017, I felt I couldn't go backwards. So whether I woke up in the morning and said, I'm never going to drink again and told the world, or whether I said in 6 months' time that was what I was going to do, it wasn't the setting of the date that did it. It was the accountability of telling everyone and not looking like a douche if I didn't. And the other question I get asked, which is similar to that, is, you know, why, you know, did you ever feel tempted? And I can honestly say I did, because I was so stubborn about it that was what I'd said I was going to do. But then I suppose the other part of the question is, yes, but you'd said that before. You'd woken up and said, I'm never going to drink again. And then the next Friday you'd gone out. But that's where the writing came into it, the spreading the word, the kind of, and it just, the more I spread the word and the more I was saying I'm doing this, the less likely I was to go back. And I say to my members, you know, I think it's like weighing scales. I think on day one, if you drink, you're not losing a lot. But if you get to day 90, like Ben, if he drinks today, day 90, you've done so much work to get to day 90 that your scales have tipped. Is that drink worth the 90 days that you've worked for? Yeah, it's a good question. I see people time and time again setting dates and saying what you said, and it's heartbreaking because you just want to go, if you're feeling like that, then just do it now.
Exactly.
But for some people, they set a date and it does work.
I do see that, and it reminds me of one phrase that we have, and it's, again, this is where Shazza and Ben hit their head against the wall. Sometimes you have to say to people, you haven't come this far to only come
this
far.
Yeah. I say it all the time. But you haven't. And, you know, I say to people, especially in a pandemic, especially in 2020, if you've got any kind of sobriety behind you, you're flipping amazing.
I totally agree.
You know, because I think this is the toughest time ever to say no to something that's going to take you away from this world. Because let's face it, none of us particularly want a beer at the moment anyway. So I just think, you know, if you're trying it and you're trying it and you're trying it, then just keep trying. And it is possible to do this because there's so much support out there now.
Totally.
One thing we've all touched on, and I think we've all got experience of, as you were talking about there, Dawn, is you need to start in order to start to reap the benefits. But in those really early days, you can be thinking, there's freaking no benefit to this. I can't get pissed tomorrow night, and I'm not doing this and I'm not doing that. And you still see it as perceived things that you're missing out on. So, for example, now it's October and there are many, many people doing Sober October, which is so commendable, absolutely fantastic. I used to do Sober October and think I was the dog's bollocks, the absolute bee's knees, because I haven't drunk in October. Come November, it would be, I can't remember November, and then sod it, let's not bother with December. And then I'd be that hanging. I just carry on through till January. So I wouldn't undo all that work. But my point is this, those people that are now doing Sober October and that are experiencing those first 4 weeks of sobriety, that the 30 days, if you just keep going, because Ben is experiencing this right now, as you said there, Dawn, it gets better and better and better. But you need to do it just a little bit longer, Dawn. Would you agree?
I'm not really a fan of doing the dry January or the sober October. I admire anybody who does, but I never did sober October because my birthday's October. There you go. I couldn't do a month because my birthday's in it. And January, I obviously did a few and got to the 1st of February and drank my quota. So the reason I'm not a fan of it is because I think the media make out that this 30 days is going to change your life.
Yeah.
And you're going to lose loads of weight. Your skin's going to look fantastic. You're going to sleep like a log. And in my opinion, it's rubbish, because you need to do more than 30 days in order to reap those benefits that the media is selling you that you're going to achieve. And so the problem is people start, and on day three, they say, I haven't lost any weight. And that's when they start losing their love for what they're doing, because they're expecting too much. So what I say to people is, you know, you need to concentrate on the sobriety, forget the weight, forget the sleep, forget everything, because you're not going to get all the things that you've been falsely promised. Just concentrate on the sobriety. And then once you've got the 30 days, then move on. And that's when the benefits start happening.
Yeah.
And also, we use the technique of we now use mixed groups within my membership group. So they are mixed with people further on than themselves, rather than all being at the same level. So when they're thinking, oh, you know, I'm only on day 10, the people who are further on can say, yeah, but on day 10, this is how I felt, and this is how I felt on day 11. So it's kind of using shared experience that it's fine you're feeling like that, don't worry about it, but you will feel better. And it's also watching people's patterns. The first 30 days of anything are not good. They're not. Because no. You're trying to break.
Yeah,
you know, and like you said about, I'm not backwards in coming forwards. What's the point in telling someone that their life is going to change dramatically in 30 days if it's not? Because you're falsely selling something to someone. So you might as well be honest about it and say, but if you push a bit further and your scales start tipping, then actually you're going to be in a much better place. But it's hard, isn't it, to try and sell to people how much better you do feel, because those people are pissed off at all the happy people going, I feel amazing. They're like, because I really don't.
I totally agree, Dawn. I mean, I think that's a dangerous thing, and it's something for important, I think, for people to understand. In my first month, I felt terrible. Like, I wasn't sleeping. My mental health actually took a dive. It was like all my drunken mistakes from the last 18 years were all coming out of the closet to haunt me. And I was thinking it was going to be like a bloody Disney movie. I thought I'd get up on day one and the, you know, the sun would be there and some little rabbit would hop up and like, hey, Mr. Freddy, well done for being sober. And that sort of thing. Don't know where that voice came from. And I was like, hang on, I want my money back because this is rubbish. I thought my life was going to be amazing now and I just feel terrible. So you have to push through that dip and those, you know, you have to go through the darkness to find the light. And
absolutely,
I think that's so,
absolutely.
So powerful for people. And if it was easy, everyone would be doing it. But because people are doing something difficult, that's what makes them extra special.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And I think the other thing that we really, our philosophy is you've got to do the work. You can't just put down a drink and pour water into your glass and expect the rabbits to come. They're not going to come, you know? You have to make the magic. And the magic is finding yourself and understanding that you don't need a drink. I think that our society is wrong in selling that we all need to drink to be happy and to have a good time and to be our genuine selves, when actually it's the complete opposite.
So I will just say, I have just Googled magic rabbit and I saw some pictures I did not expect to see.
Hi, this is Ben from Over the Influence, and if you're enjoying this episode, then I'm sure that you'll love our premium podcast, an extra weekly podcast that's exclusive for our subscribers and community members. It's just me and Shaz chatting, so we don't feel like we need to behave ourselves like we do when we've got a guest on, and it gives us a chance to explore more topics around alcohol-free life in detail, from workplace drinking cultures to sober dating. By signing up to the premium podcast, you also get access to the entire back catalogue of OTI Premium Pod episodes, including our brilliant Survive the Summer mini-series that tackles everything from tips to get through those boozy barbecues to having a fabulous alcohol-free holiday. This week's episode is already out and you can listen to it as soon as you finish listening to this one. All you got to do is go to overtheinfluence.supercast.com, sign up, and it will automatically drop into your normal podcast app. So that's overtheinfluence.supercast.com, and by becoming a premium pod listener, you're supporting us and our mission here at Over the Influence to encourage as many people as we can to try giving up alcohol by singing about the joys of sobriety from the rooftops. So thank you for your support. Right, back to the episode.
How do you feel as a woman, the messages were sold about alcohol? As a mum, you know, in my 40s, I used to subscribe to all this, these drinking blogs, bizarrely. I won't name them now, but there are plenty of drinking blogs out there.
Is there a drinking blog? Like a blog about getting pissed?
Specifically aimed at stressed out, tired women. Working women, mums, single women, every woman under the sun. And it's wine o'clock and it's gin o'clock and the Prosecco made me do it. And until I stopped and then realised there was a whole other flip side of that out there, sober fish community, you know, every other sober community on Instagram and Facebook, I didn't realise quite how much it is shoved in your face on a daily basis. And I'm asking you how you feel about that.
We're a similar age. So I think we all got sucked in by the Ladette culture. You know, suddenly drinking became really cool because people like Sarah Cox and Zoe Ball were doing it and they were going out and making dicks out of themselves. But that was really funny, you know, and in my 20s were, you know, I'd never heard prinks before recently. So when you said it, that made me laugh. But, you know, God, we used to drink as much as some people probably drink in a weekend, like in an hour before we went out. You know, and the whole reason for that used to be because of money, because it was cheaper to drink at home than go out. But you still used to spend the same amount of money when you were out and, like you say, with shots and all the rest of it. And I think the difference in generations, like my mum's generation, that kind of behaviour just would not have been acceptable. But it became acceptable, and it became okay to do it on your own as a woman. It became acceptable to drink at home on your own as a woman. My mum wouldn't have drunk at home on her own. Yeah. And you know, and so I always remember thinking, oh, when I get my first flat, I'm going to have wine in the fridge, you know, and I'm going to come home from work and have a glass of wine, more like a bottle or bottle and a half. And so, you know, whilst I'm not a mum, it makes me sad the way our society has sold wine as a medicine. Oh, if your kids are driving you mad today, just have a drink. You know, get the kids in bed, have a drink. And the amount of people that I hear say, oh, I used to rush the story so that I could get downstairs, you know, and don't get me wrong, I'm not judging anyone by saying that. I used to be the babysitter and do that, you know, God, just get them in bed and then I can get onto the good bit. I used to get paid in wine when I babysat my friend's kids, you know, like just the thought of it is just bizarre now. And I just think, you know, it will change because communities like mine will change it. And I feel that for each sober person that goes out and, you know, like you guys, and spreading the word and saying, actually, there's another way. Actually, if you're really tired as a mum, why are you drinking something that makes you really tired? You know, and it's when the mums get through the breakthrough of, say, 3 months sober and start going, oh, my God, I wasn't that tired. Actually, they're not that annoying. Actually, I really like reading them stories. They can now have three. It's seeing that what we've been sold was an illusion.
Mm. Dawn, do you think it was inevitable in a way that, because that ladette culture did shift the gender balance in a lot of different ways, was it inevitable that your generation were going to drink as almost part of redressing that balance between how men and women acted in society?
Yeah, I think probably yes, because now it's interesting watching the next generation and they're not like that. So that kind of generation peaked at we're going to do what they can do kind of thing. But the thing is with, you know, especially my group of girlfriends, when we went out, we would drink men under the table. Men would go home and we were still going. Do you know what I mean? So we kind of, not that it's a competition, but I feel that we didn't just peak, we overtook and just went crazy. And the men were still drinking their pints going, God, what's going on? You know, because their drinking has kind of stayed, you know, it didn't really change that much for men. But yeah, I just think we kind of all went a little bit crazy. And then the next generation seems to be going. See, the other thing that I think is that I never put two and two together with weight. So I've always battled with my weight. I've been to Weight Watchers, Slimming World. I've done all of them since I was 16. And I've drunk all the way through them. And the only time I've successfully lost weight is when I stopped drinking. And I've kept weight off until lockdown. I put it back on. I'm back on the journey again. But I successfully kept that weight off whilst eating pretty much what I liked for the longest time ever because I wasn't drinking. And I think the next generation have put two and two together. They're clever because, you see, I just thought if you drank something, it went straight through you. It didn't stick. Whereas they're going, yeah, but if I have that wine, that's the same as a donut. I'm not drinking that. And so I think that, you know, our generation I just feel that we went kind of a little bit crazy with everything. And so I think the peak is over. I think people are starting to understand about alcohol now that it's not exactly what we were sold. You know, it's not this magical liquid that's going to save your life. It's going to really damage your life if you don't do something about it. But we're all too far in now, because if you've been drinking since your 20s and you're now in your 40s, it's a very ingrained habit that's difficult to change.
I think certainly I totally agree with that, Dawn. I think it's funny looking at the different generations. I know we can't fully understand what, you know, what our grandparents went through and everything, but I think it's fair to say that right now in 2020, if you wanted to have a drink, there would be plenty of excuses to do so. Then if you look back, there's always been those excuses. You know, our grandparents had, you know, the influenza pandemic, they had Spanish flu, they had world wars. In the 60s, there was, you know, the threat of nuclear war. There's always going to be that excuse to reach for the bottle. But I think if we can tip that balance, then, and as you say, if people can get through this moment, then you really can get through anything.
But I don't think our generation necessarily needed an excuse anymore.
No.
And I think that was part of the problem. And people laugh at me for saying this, but I also blame X Factor. Because if you look back, when drinking became expensive going out, we all started staying in. Now, before, it wasn't really that acceptable to drink at home. My parents say it was expensive. You know, to get a bottle of wine cost you a lot of money. But wine in supermarkets then started becoming cheaper. So people started staying in more as a family event, like on a Saturday night. So you'd have your mates around, wouldn't you? Get a big Chinese and have loads of drinks at home. You wouldn't have to pay for a taxi. You wouldn't have to pay for a babysitter. So that's where the shift kind of changed, because then it became acceptable to have wine in the house. And then people stopped going out, and it stopped becoming so much aggro to go to the pub and get a cab and all the rest of it. So I think that's, again, why lockdown has probably affected people so badly, because they were used to having drink in the house. They were used to having those kind of, you know, we've been encouraged, haven't we, that our social life now happens behind closed doors. So if you were already in the habit of doing that, that's why it wasn't so unacceptable to just crack on doing it every night of the week. But now I think this is where we're going to have the problem, is as life gets back to normal, whatever that is... You've got a lot of people now in an ingrained habit that's going to take a lot of reversal.
I was just going to say that. Yeah, it's once you keep upping your alcohol limit, obviously your body becomes more resilient to that and your habits grow. And it's so much harder, isn't it, Dawn, to move back away from that?
Yeah. And I think for me as well, like drinking at home, I would buy a bottle of Hendrick's gin, which was in a black bottle. And you couldn't see how much was in it. And I'd get to the end of that so quickly, but I wouldn't know because I couldn't see it. And I'd be like that.
Holding the bottle or something.
I know. I'd literally be holding it up. Like,
I can't have drunk that.
But because you're free pouring, whereas, you know, if the alcohol was limited to going to the pubs when our parents were younger, you'd have a measure and you'd have a couple of drinks and then you'd go home. So, it's this free pouring as well, isn't it? That you're just like... You have no idea how much you're actually taking in.
And a key one for me as well, I totally agree with what you were saying about, you know, it starts off with the, oh, we're going to stay in tonight, so I'll get a bottle of wine. Then before you know it, you're in the supermarket for half an hour, scanning the shelves like a Terminator, looking for that one bottle that's 16.5%. Because you're there going, oh, 13%, 13, 14, 13, 15, 16.5%, that's the one for me. And I'd spend ages doing that, just that extra 0.5%. You wouldn't even know about it. But there's that thing around, if it's a bottle of wine, then I'll make sure it's the strongest.
But then it was 6 bottles for the price of 5. So then you'd end up, you wouldn't just buy one, and one wouldn't be enough, because in case it wasn't quite enough, you'd have 2. And my problem as well with, I was always the same with cigarettes that I bought on holiday. Like when you buy the 200s, I'd smoke them in like so quickly that I'd just be like, oh my God, they're all gone, or drink the 6 bottles. So I still have that problem. I can't buy anything in bulk because I will eat it all as well. So it's that kind of mentality that you've got loads surrounding you, that it's party time. And unfortunately, you know, that's not helpful to anyone.
I think it's a really interesting view with that, Dawn, because I think it is that all or nothing mentality that I personally believe that many of us that have, you know, changed our relationships with alcohol have got, you know, that all go hard or go home, no off switch, all or nothing, which was certainly the case for me, and I know so many other people as well. But I think, why can't you take that same mentality and flip it on its head so it's a positive? So I'm going to say it's all or nothing in terms of positive mental health, it's all or nothing in terms of how I feel about myself. And you can still take that same mindset, but then just turn it around and say, I'm going to have an all or nothing approach, but it's going to be only for positive things.
Yeah, no, it's the same thing. If you focus on, I think somebody mentioned it, you know, the missing out aspect. If you sit there going, I'm missing out, everyone's having fun, I wish I could do that, why am I not normal, whatever that is. But if you say, actually, I'm doing this for my health, I'm going to feel better, I'm going to eventually lose weight, I'm doing it because I don't want to damage myself anymore, and focus on why you're doing it rather than why you're not doing it, that's what gives the positive result. And again, that all comes with time. I think people are really, you know, another thing of our generation is we want everything tomorrow. But I think you said it earlier, the best things take time, and you've just got to be patient with that.
Dawn, I look at the pictures that you share on social media and they make me howl. They're brilliant. So Dawn does these posts on her Instagram on the Soberfish, and it's you at your the height of your fun partying days, and there's a picture of you like clutching this drink with your eye makeup running, and there's a picture of you 3 or 4 years later now as you are. Oh my God, it's not just that the physical appearance obviously has changed, you know, you've lost weight, but you were supposed to be happy on those drinking photos. And when you compare it to how you look now, the difference is incredible. I mean, they talk about the sober glow, don't they? And the happiness. And you, all you've got to do is compare your eyes on both pictures.
Yeah.
And it's breathtaking.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I remember posting my first before and after photo, and I remember it clearly. It was a Friday night because my before photo, unfortunately, I'm in fancy dress. I was Aunt Sally. You might not actually recognise that I
no.
was Aunt Sally.
But I wasn't quite sure what you were.
And so I've got like red, little red round cheeks, yeah. and somebody had painted god awful eye makeup. I look like a pantomime dame, really, rather than Aunt Sally. And I never knew that that would end up being my before photo, because that was taken probably about 4 hours before I had my last drink. But of course, I didn't know that was my last drink. Yeah, when I posted the first before and after photo, you kind of post it and go, what's going to happen now? And it went absolutely nuts. And of course, I didn't, you know, I do look a lot better now. That was probably after about 6 months or something. And it was just phenomenal. And I just thought, isn't it ironic that that's how my journey began, was by seeing other people's before and afters. And now my before and afters have become things that influence other people to think about their drinking habits. And, you know, there's a fine line between being, you know, some people are like, oh God, here she goes again sharing her photos. But the majority of people are say the same. It's the eyes, isn't it? I just look
every
dead
time.
Behind the eyes.
Yeah, every time.
And, you know, at the time, the before photo of the last night I had a drink, I was in a terrible state. I was mixed up with someone who was no good for me, who was literally playing me like a carrot on a string, if that's the right phrase. And I had handed in my notice at work because I'd been offered another job, and that was kind of worrying me whether it was the right decision to make. I was on a weekend with friends where they were all in couples, and I felt, you know, bit of a outsider because I wasn't. The weekend was totally alcohol fueled from the minute you get there to the minute you go home. Plus I was coming down with the flu. So mix all of that up, I was in a terrible state, which is why I look so bloody awful. But if you'd asked me at the time if I look that bad, I would have said no. It's only when you look at how you can be once you've cut out that relationship, once you've stopped going on drinking weekends, once the job turned out okay and actually has opened up a whole load of opportunities for me, and I stopped drinking earlier than I anticipated, that you realise that the route I took was totally the right one to take.
Dawn, thanks so much for sharing all this. It's always intriguing and fascinating to hear where somebody's come from to where they are now. And it's safe to say that removing booze, it's completely changed your life. You are now changing the lives of others who may be struggling with alcohol with your own sober community.
Yeah.
How does it feel going from where you are to where you are now and having had such an impact on your own life and now sharing that with others?
Yeah, it's mind-blowing, if I'm honest, because when I first started sharing on the Soberfish story, I didn't expect it to go as far as it did. So it started off with friends, and friends were interested, and then I made it public. And actually, that's a lie. It was public from the beginning. But the way Facebook works is that it will attract people that you know first, and before it gets bigger. And then it started attracting people I didn't know. And then it just kind of snowballed from there. And so I then realised, the first thing that I realised was that there was a lot of people out there who thought they were on their own. And by sharing my journey, it made them feel less alone, and it encouraged them to think about their drinking habits. And then as that kind of grew, the reason I'm saying about the public page is that anybody can read the public page. And some people didn't like the fact that if they comment or like, then other people can see it. So I knew there was room for a private group, but didn't quite know how that would look. The other thing is, as you probably realise, running a sober community takes a lot of time. So I work full time, and then the rest of my waking hours, I am doing sober stuff. And you have to kind of think, right, if I want this to be a job, it needs to start making money. And it's another very moot point, because for some weird reason, everybody thinks that sober work should be free.
Yeah. Classic.
And I was just kind of like, I can't do this for, I can't maintain this forever, because I'm giving, but I'm also working to survive. So I need to do something about that. So I had an idea that I would monetize the blog by making a private membership group. And I expected everybody to come into the group. Which is such a crazy idea when I think about it now, because A, I couldn't cope if thousands of people started to come into a membership group. But also, the membership group I thought was going to replicate the blog, but actually doesn't replicate the blog at all. It's a completely different baby. And then within that group, it became different, because the public group is more about me putting memes out and making people laugh and trying to encourage people to give sober a go. Whereas behind closed doors, the membership group then became more like a family, I guess. You know, people were really open because the public weren't reading it, sharing their stories, doing videos, things like that. And then I just realised that the family aspect of it was keeping people sober. So one of the comments with other sober groups is that when they get too big and people feel anonymous, they feel just as anonymous as they did when they didn't have their community. So my aim was to keep it very small, because small was keeping people sober. I hope that's answered the question, because I kind of feel I went off on the tangent then.
No, really, I think that's an amazing phrase there, Dawn. Yeah, small keeps people sober. And I think that's wonderful, because trying to be sober is a scary, dark place at times, and having that smaller community of like-minded people who can really, it's having people that feel like they can understand you, and that they've been where you've been, and that they can support you. And I know exactly what you mean with, you know, with the bigger groups, it can feel like you're shouting in the middle of a crowd and no one's listening, which sometimes can be even more painful and even more difficult. But I think it sounds what you're doing, and with your groups, and I'm a big fan of your blog as well. I think it's amazing.
Thank you.
Dawn, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. It's been a joy to chat to you. It's been great fun and really inspiring too. If there's somebody listening now thinking, I want to be where Dawn is, I want to do what Dawn's done, where can they find you, Dawn?
Okay, so my blog is The Sober Fish Story, which is on Facebook. You can get resources from www.soberfish.co.uk. There's my blogs from the start of my journey, and other people's blogs are on there to read. On Instagram and Twitter, at soberfishy.
Fantastic. Brilliant. Thank you so much.
No, it's been amazing. Lovely to meet you.
What another fantastic episode of Over the Influence. Absolutely brilliant stuff. We couldn't do it without our wonderful guests. Thank you so much. And thank you to you for listening. We really couldn't do it without you. If you would like further information about what we do within our alcohol-free community, I'll give you the website address in just a sec. One aspect of what we do are our forums, and this is where members can post privately about how their alcohol-free journey is going, if they are struggling, if they're needing a bit of a lift out of a particularly bad hour, bad night, bad weekend. Our members rally round, pull those people up, and before you know it, they are back on track. We help you through the difficult times. We celebrate your wins. We cheer on your milestones. We don't care if it is 7 days, 7 months, or 7 years. We have got members within our community on day one. We've got members that are on day 1,000. And all those people are supporting one another through our forums. It is just wonderful. If you'd like further information, just take a look at overtheinfluence.co.uk. And if you've got any questions at all and you'd like us to explain a little bit more about what we do, drop us an email. Not a problem. The email address is otihq@overtheinfluence.co.uk. Thank you so much, and thank you so much for listening.